The Truth News Network. Thought, not just talk. Where the truth sets us all free. TNN.
The Truth News Network.
And your host is Dan Newman.
Hi there, everyone. Welcome to Truth News Network. I hope your day's going well, and I hope your week's gone well. Today, we're going to get right back to what's going on in Washington, D.C. And the title of today's story is Divide and Conquer. Now, why is it that more and more people just don't seem to get along? I don't think I've ever seen it this vile. That's just in what we see. I can only imagine how nasty it is behind the scenes. Now, we'll get to politics in a moment. But division and nastiness, don't begin there. I really don't remember my age when I first noticed people taking sides. It was even before kindergarten, though. But it was when I started school that I began to notice there were kids that were better than me. At least, that's what I was told. Betty's dad owned a big company, which automatically made Betty better than me. Tom was from a prominent Catholic family, and in South Louisiana, where I grew up, being prominent and Catholic was a really big deal. When youth baseball began, I was just 7 years old. Since I was the youngest on my team, I was stuck behind the plate to be the catcher. Now, everyone in baseball knows catcher is one of the toughest positions on a baseball diamond. And catchers can make great plays to win games, and catchers can make bad plays that cost games. I don't remember a single great play I made at catcher. I'm sure I made a few. Naturally, my teammates let me know how inadequate my play was. My ball reputation played out at school, too. My rep dropped a few notches the next school year. The older I got, the better than or less than stigma changed addresses and changed schools, but it never really changed itself. If anything, it heightened. By the time I got to college, I determined that there were people that had more than I do, guys that were better looking than me, and girls that in no way would ever consider dating me. Yeah, it was tough at first, but I soon realized that to live in this world and find happiness for myself, I had to find a way to not only accept myself, but to find ways to get along with other people. No matter how wealthy, how popular, how good an athlete, how good a student, and how attractive a person is, to make it in life, we each must find ways to successfully interact with others. Nobody does it alone. But how do you do that? Well, first realize and accept that everybody's different. It's ridiculous to continually try to be someone for one person and then have to change and be someone else for another person. The secret to staving off that dilemma, find people with whom you relate on various levels and that you have similarities on which you are comfortable. Accept and build on those similarities. And guess what? It works. It didn't get better the older I got, though. Fellow workers and friends all seemed to prioritize their friendships based on desired personal realities rather than on realities alone. As an example, a good friend wanted to befriend a wealthy guy in town. The wealthy guy was hung up in a circle of other wealthy guys. But my buddy was committed to break into that group. So, he faked a bunch of personal wealth. He bought things he couldn't afford, like a Rolex watch, Armani suits, a fancy car. You get the picture. He took trips that he couldn't afford. And all he accomplished with those efforts was a whole lot of debt. There was really no incentive for the members of the circle he wanted to penetrate to let him do so. As far as they were concerned, he didn't bring anything to their table. Truth. To work with people and get anything done, one must find commonalities and similar interests. But it goes much further. Even if commonalities are there, both sides must be willing to and want to share those commonalities with each other. Now, that doesn't mean you've got to agree with everything other people believe to be friends and to get along. What it means is each must share a willingness to ignore others' differences, respect others' right to have differences, and push through those differences to build a relationship based on commonalities, all the while accepting the differences of each other. Sounds simple, right? Nope. Politics. Politics. I'm uncertain who made the rules of politics in America. Our forefathers penned the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. But you know what? They didn't write the official book of politics. No one wrote an official book of politics. And there are no certain rules that govern politics. But there certainly are those who act like they not only know all the do's and don'ts of politics, they determined all those rules. And in that lies the rub that we face today. Political discourse in the U.S. today is not based on commonalities and finding ways to work within differences. Fortunately for Americans, it did that formally. No doubt there were serious and even lethal disputes in the 1700s and 1800s, but there were far more differences worked through, with often long and loud debates, screaming matches, and even threats. There was even a famous duel. But on the most part, early American political leaders found ways, if not to put away differences, work within differences for the common good of the nation. And thankfully, it worked. Today, though, it's a different story. Political differences have changed the discourse of Americans. In the last decade, we have watched the rapid decline of any desire of political leaders to work together with party opponents to craft and implement rules, laws, and policies that work for the good of America. Examples of this are in immigration, Second Amendment rights, free speech, right to life, and abortion, foreign policy, economic policy, pretty much everything that is critical to everyday life for all Americans. When and how did that begin? You know, I don't know for certain when that was, but somewhere in that process, former Obama, when he was in office, evidenced his position when in a public disagreement with Republicans said this, elections matter. Elections matter. What did he mean? He was referring to the fact that more Americans voted for his reelection in 2012 than did for Mitt Romney for president. In other words, the other side can want what they want, but we won. The winning means we don't have to consider what anyone else on the other side thinks or wants. We're just going to do it our way. Now, he didn't really say that, but his actions then and after showed that's what he meant. And in the Trump presidency, more and more evidence proves that in politics, consensus on any and all political matters probably is not going to be found most of the time. In fact, politicians have perfected a new way of interacting with each other in Washington. Neither political party has an exclusive on this process, but Democrats have certainly perfected it. It's called divide and conquer. So, we set the stage there in the first segment. When we come back, the second segment is going to be a little shorter and a little more brief, but it's going to tell you how divide and conquer is supposed to work. That's just ahead at Truth News Net. TruthNewsNet.org.
We don't tell you what to think,
but we give you truth to think about. This is TNN, the Truth News Network.
TruthNewsNet.org.
Long live the courageous.
May God bless and keep you always. May you
the tenacious. The ones who push forward and give back. Long live the greater good. The helping hand. Those who fall and get back up. And long live the truck with the strength to overcome. The will to outwork. And the commitment to outlast them all. Ram, proven to last.
Clarity of thought Clarity of vision, clarity of message.
TruthNewsNet.org.
Again, Dan Newman.
Well, we all grew up in an atmosphere of divide and conquer, and we're still living in it today. How does it work? Well, first, truth left the Capitol in D.C. a long time ago. Oh, it's there, but it sure is hard to find, and it's very seldom seen. It's been replaced with political correctness. I could give you example after example of how political correctness is used, but you already know what I'm referencing. When the president says something that others do not like and therefore do not accept, they'll trumpet that he said something else entirely, or they'll simply scream to hills what his meaning in saying it was. Of course, they can read his mind, you know that. And his purported meaning almost always is, and I don't even have to say this, you know what I'm going to say, he's a racist. Name-calling is a common American art of deflection. But there have always been people that fall easily for it. Remember as kids when someone claimed that Susie had a crush on Johnny and Johnny was a nerd? By the end of the first recess of the day, everyone at school was calling Susie a nerd because she had a crush on Johnny. That certainly simplifies what I'm talking about, but it illustrates today's subject. To reach a desired objective without the truth, one must rely on pure emotion and convince others to fall in line with the lie, and that's called divide. I promised that at my school when Susie was labeled a nerd because she liked Johnny, if Susie could ever shake the nerd tag, it would have taken a long time. I don't know if she ever did. I don't remember. Now, I don't know how many times since the 2016 campaign I have heard Donald Trump called a racist. For one to believe that, one would be required to dismiss 50-plus years of very public daily Trump interactions with hundreds of thousands of people from all over the world. Certainly, in his career, or the career of any person, a racist would have sowed his oats of racism again and again, especially among so many people. He couldn't possibly not do that. And if he did, there would be hundreds of those offended standing in line at the courthouse filing suits against the billionaire, especially abused employees. Have you heard of any? I wonder why not. Because Mr. Trump has lived a life of evidence that he is not a racist. In fact, his life shows just the opposite. Leaders in the minority community have even given him in the past humanitarian awards for being such a help and guide in the African-American community. They stood in line to be with him at public events of all kinds for decades, people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. But they all stand far away from President Trump today. Being friends with Donald Trump would mean you'd be a friend with a racist. But that's not enough. It's not sufficient for the left to simply attack the president as a racist. Now the cries are against all Americans who voted for him. White supremacist foot soldiers perceive President Donald Trump's rhetoric as subliminal orders in their head, warns MSNBC's national security analyst Malcolm Nance. In an interview with MSNBC's Hardball during a segment on the massacres in El Paso and Dayton, Ohio, Nance claimed mass shootings in the U.S. are fueled by far-right, white supremacist ideology, by shooters who want to eliminate liberalism. Trump is fostering a culture that facilitates white supremacist terrorists, Nance argued. These people feel that they are the foot soldiers and executors of what the disenfranchisement that the white race is feeling, and Donald Trump is giving them subliminal orders in their heads, he said. Now, this is a commentator, somebody who knows something, on MSNBC saying this. He continued, "They are no different than the mobilized, self-starting, self-radicalized terrorist of ISIS here in the United States and Europe who take cars and drive down streets. It's just that they have a permissive environment in which they can get firearms and go out and attack their perceived enemies." Wow. So it's no longer just President Trump. Anybody who supports President Trump is of the same ilk or is a racist. There are 60 plus million people voted for him. And I don't know how many millions more of Americans that didn't vote or pro-Trump. But let's just say another 10 million or so. So 70 million people that live in America, according to Mr. Nance, are racist. The push to divide moves ever forward. Certainly, there's a messenger or someone who controls the message and the messenger of division. We just heard what the message of the division is. Who could be that messenger? Well, the left-leaning mainstream media would be a great place to start, right? How about the New York Times, that bastion of journalistic integrity that still calls itself, quote, America's premier news source? Well, listen to this. Dean Baquet, the executive editor of the New York Times, said recently that after the Mueller report came out, the paper, the New York Times, has to shift the focus of its coverage from the Trump-Russia affair to the president's alleged racism. This is what he said. Listen closely. We built our newsroom to cover one story, and we did it truly well, Baquet said. Now we have to regroup and shift resources and emphasize to take on a different story. Baquet used the gentlest term possible, quote, the story changed. But the fact is, the conspiracy coordination allegation the Times had devoted itself to pursuing turned out to be dead wrong, purely false. 2.5 years, folks. Beyond that, Democrats on Capitol Hill struggled to press an obstruction case against the president. The Trump-Russia hole came up dry. But it ain't over. They never quit. Now, Baquet continued. He said this, I think that we've got to change. The Times must, this is his words, write more deeply about the country, race, and other divisions. I mean, the vision for coverage for the next 2 years is what I talked about earlier. How do we cover a guy who makes these kinds of remarks? Baquet said. How do we cover the world's reaction to him? How do we do that while continuing to cover his policies? How do we cover America that's become so divided by Donald Trump, the racist? So, let's just pull this all together. So where's the conquer and the divide and conquer? That's what they're all promised is going to happen. All of the Trump haters from every news organization, political party, people in office, Democrats, Republicans, and independents alike seem to all take their cue for political beliefs from the propaganda distributed by the New York Times and its informal satellites around the nation. And there are a bunch of them. All of them are convinced that even if not true, a majority of Americans will believe what they are telling Americans if they tell it over and over again. Democrat Party leadership have realized there is no hope for a Democrat Senate, White House, and probably the House unless they are successful in their very obvious ploy to destroy any shred of credibility which Donald Trump possesses. And when they're through, their prayer is their propaganda will have destroyed him, his family, and each and every Trump supporter in the entire country. How sad is that? How could anyone, especially leaders in Washington, charged with shaping every segment of America and supposedly doing so at the will of Americans, be so consumed with hatred for one man, they would abandon the very foundation of the nation and all it stands for, the millions who have lived fruitful and constructive lives here through several centuries and who have done the same for millions of those overseas, and launch instead some campaign to destroy this one man? That indeed would put the conquer in place that they lust for. I don't know why they're doing it. Do they fear something? Do they simply so hate what Donald Trump stands for that they would almost in unison find devious ways to run him out of office? Or do they simply hate the fact that they may be being exposed for feeding their flocks the lies of propaganda that are good enough to pacify their lambs while they feast at the table of luxury and power in Washington that they crafted on the backs of those baby lambs in their flocks? I'm not sure. But one thing of which I am certain, Americans are not asleep. We may have been, but we're not anymore. Americans understand far more than DC thinks we do. Maybe that's what they're afraid of. Maybe we're the fly in the ointment of that war to dethrone Trump, of which they're certain they will win. Well, maybe. We'll just wait and see, right? Wow. There's so much that comes to light. Every day it just seems like a new chapter in Washington, D.C. This could be a romance novel. It could be a spy novel, all rolled into one. It could even be a Western novel, a military novel. There's plenty of stuff going on there every day to write plenty of novels. Well, we're not going to write a novel about it, but we are staying on top of it for you. So make sure you stay close here to Truth News Network. We'll be back tomorrow with another chapter, truthnewsnet.org. We'll see you then. Have a great one.
He'll never let you fall to the lies. Your bulwark against the tide of fake news. Dan Newman, TNN,
the Truth News Network.